same Blake Oxcord. Depression. Sadness. Feelings. That's, welcome to the Fan Morning Show.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. But that gave me big WB vibes. Like, you know, mid-2000s WB show. Like, One Tree Hillish. Like, that song could have played on that show. We could be sitting here, like, I expect drama to be happening between all of us right now.
The
like, somebody's
characters.
Got a secret, you know? And, like, one of us is about to reveal it.
Yeah, the OC is the more natural place for it. That's Death Cab, so it's it's Seth's band. But yeah,
so I knew I should have. But it had that vibe. I didn't know it was Death Cab for Cutie. Yeah. I've never been a huge Death Cab guy.
Yeah, One Tree Hill's a better pull anyway. There's just more basketball in that show.
Yeah.
It's got like that little spice of Friday Night Lights where it's like, oh, I'm watching a teen drama, but at least there's sports in it. It's a sports show,
except
like,
for
one basketball scene per season.
Yeah. That show had the all-time, we're not even trying to make this appease basketball fans. We're going to make the rims 9 feet tall, and every scene will not care that they're 9 feet tall right in front of you. We're going to have these two guys dunk and look like stars in gymnasiums that look like cardboard boxes with 9 feet rims and just stick it right in your face. They did not care.
Yeah, I'd like to imagine that. Like, as they were negotiating for this show, and like, obviously, season one, you can't pull a lot of stuff. Like, you're a pretty unknown teen actor, but eventually, like, Chad Michael Murray or whoever the other guy is just like, look, I need it in my contract that I throw down dunks. Like, once a season, you got to show me pulling off a 360 or a windmill or something like that. That's what I would do. I'd be like, look, if I'm going to be a basketball player and you're not going to let me. Like, obviously, you're not going to have me play the basketball scenes. I'm 5'10". Yeah, I would have that in my contract. Absolutely. Yeah, let me bang.
Heartthrob, Chad Michael Murray. Heartthrob. Yeah. What? At that time? That guy was
scintillating. I didn't watch the OC or One Tree Hill.
You were four. That's what I'm saying. We had different heartthrobs than you, all right?
I agree. So then I can say that, no, he was not a heartthrob.
Yeah,
what do you have? Like Sweet Life
Bieber.
Of Zach Cody or something?
Exactly.
I didn't watch that either. I didn't watch much TV. I was out grinding. I was in the gym.
You were grinding.
I was running stairs at the stadium.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing the wrist curls with the hockey puck, getting my fitness on. Okay, I didn't have time for TV.
Yeah, right.
Couldn't possibly do wrist curls in front of the TV.
Never. Yeah. No TV in this household.
No
my
TV.
Parents,
no TV.
Piano and sports. You're going to learn to use your brain to be an athlete. And look where that got me with you two clowns.
Yeah, same spot. Yeah. Only sooner. Just sooner. That's it. You got here sooner. Welcome. So, yes, welcome to the Fan Morning Show. I'm JD Bunk. It's Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So, the whipping boy. Is gone. Bye-bye, whipping boy. Nick Ritchie waved a day after we did a bunch of Nick Ritchie content. We kind of blew it.
Maybe we made it happen.
We were too good at our jobs. We were too good. We'd like to apologize to the audience for yesterday being too good at our jobs and basically prognosticating this. But the writing was on the wall. The dude was a healthy scratch, and it seemed pretty clear that the only way that he was going to get in the lineup was if someone was hurt or someone needed a rest day. And when they signed Kyle Clifford and he came here, and let's not get it twisted. Kyle Clifford didn't look great by any stretch of the imagination, but when it was pretty apparent that there wasn't a sizable gap between the two guys' play, that you'd rather keep the cheaper of the two options. Nick Ritchie making $2.5 million. The fit was never quite there. He was never really embraced by Toronto Maple Leafs fans as a whole. I shouldn't be writing him off because he could clear waivers and maybe he does end up back with his team in some capacity. There are some reports that the Leafs don't want to lose him, but I think that's all Kyle Dubas saying to reporters. Hey, can you carry a bag for me, and I'll do something later for you. And then guess what? He'll never do that something for them. He's gone. I have two questions. Is Nick Ritchie being waived an actual sign of how good Kyle Dubas' year has been? And two, upon his departure, maybe we'll do this one after, who becomes the new whipping boy in Toronto? Because there has to be a whipping boy, and it feels like it can't. Justin Hall can't carry it all.
I was just about to say Justin Hall.
No, but he's not carrying it all, and he just scored a goal since the new year. Like, the new hockey season started. Justin Hall's
That's
on the
true.
Board. So I want to know if there's a – maybe I'll take it to – yeah, we have – you got to have sort of two whipping boyish characters. And now the Leafs are down a whipping boy in a market that loves a whipping boy. So you guys got to give me a whipping boy. But first, let's talk about Dubas.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's great, right? Like, I think it's a good sign that they brought in this guy and he was supposed to play up the lineup and so many guys have hit underneath him. Like, obviously, you can't spin a, hey, this didn't work out as a good thing. But we've talked about this a lot, right? You let a Hyman go. You take four or five shots at lower end guys. And if we're being honest, like, sure, Dubas would tell you, oh, I hoped all of them would work out, or I thought all of them would work out. But when you're shopping at that level and that tier of free agent, if you hit on a couple of them, you're in good shape. So I do think you have to look at Richie, Camp, Kasha, Bunting. Like, you have to look at those guys as kind of a group in terms of, hey, these are the flyers they were taking. It's unfortunate that the most expensive one of that group is the one who didn't work out. I also, you know, not to pat myself on the back or anything like that, but it's also the one that, like, it raised the most eyebrows at the price tag. Like, when the Bruins let him walk if I'm remembering right, a qualifying offer that was lower than what he ended up getting from Toronto. And, like, it's a skill set that is a little more readily available cheap. It wasn't the best of signings. But, yeah, I mean, Camp, Kasha, Engvall, Bunting, all those guys have hit for really cheap. And if you have to eat a little bit on Richie as part of that kind of general bottom six strategy, then I think that's okay.
And it's not to say that they didn't give Richie an adequate opportunity. He started the season on the first line and slipped slowly down the entire roster. He had opportunities to play with every single forward unit, and he had opportunities to sit in the press box and to learn and to grow and to come back and to hopefully have changed. He even had a time where Kyle Clifford was signed, which put a little bit of fire underneath him, like, hey, buddy, if we can get this guy to do what you're here to do, can that, you know, ignite something in you? So he was given a complete opportunity, like a very long half season tryout. He comes back after being a healthy scratch against the Oilers, and it was just, there wasn't that fire, that desire to actually prove his spot. And I think that at that point, what else can you ask for? You cannot keep putting someone out there and coddling them and giving them these opportunities. I think you've kind of shown everything you can do. And that's the only thing that I leave this conversation with, is like, Dubas gave him every single opportunity. We're not left being like, well, we didn't give him a chance to be a fourth line grind. He didn't get a chance to play with Matthews. He got every opportunity available to him. Maybe he's just not the right fit. And if he clears waivers, there could be something down in the future for him. He might be a part of the Marlies organization. He might, you know, have that opportunity to prove himself, or some other team will pick him up and maybe he'll do better there.
I think the future has to be Kyle Dubas just attaching an asset to him, and not a major asset, obviously, but getting him out of town and trying to send him to a cap haven team, somewhere that has space where they can easily absorb his $2.5 million next year and that they'll do it for a draft pick. Mm-hmm. That's the one to me. This goes back to something that Brian Burke always talked about when he worked for Sportsnet, which is some guys are just not cut out for this market. And I really believe that Nick Ritchie was one of those dudes. Where, you're right, Ailish, he got opportunities, he started the season, and on paper, he was supposed to be all the things that could fit with a Mitch Marner and Auston Matthews. Mm-hmm. He's big, all he needed to do was stand in front of the net and stand in the slot. Nick Ritchie clearly has hands for a big man, right? This isn't some complete chopper. Think about even what Connor Brown has gotten a lot better, but what Connor Brown was at the beginning of his career in Toronto, where it was like, this guy's trying to chop the puck into a square every time that he was on the ice with Auston Matthews. Richie had hands. There was a moment in the preseason where Marner found him, and I know it was preseason.
Yeah, he had two goals.
Yeah, Marner finds him in the slot, and he was ripping him, and it looked clean, and you thought, oh, okay, this vision sort of makes sense. This guy's not Zach Hyman, but it's something different that might work with these guys. It never worked. It never even had a moment. It never had a flash. Nick Ritchie just couldn't figure it out. All he needed to do, a very, very simple job, he could not get it done. He wasn't physical enough. He didn't score enough goals. He just left you wanting every single night. Mm-hmm. Didn't bring enough engagement with regularity. And coming off of that career year, and yeah, I can't remember which of you said it, but the fact that Boston didn't want him, and that's a winning franchise. Mm-hmm. And then that Dubas gave him the $2.5 million over 2 years. You're right. That was the two most head scratching contracts of the offseason were Richie and Mrazek, and it has turned out to be that way, right? Where you look at both of them and go, huh? Kasha was always a flyer that you thought could work out if he could stay healthy. It was also a byproduct, a little bit of Kampf, right? Because those two guys have a connection. Kampf was the biggest surprise, and I would say is the biggest hit of the offseason for Kyle Dubas, because a lot of people thought Bunting could be somebody. Kampf was a completely unknown, bad charts, bad eye test, no goals, no nothing, and Dubas identified that guy, went out and got him and nailed it. So, yes, to me this is Kyle Dubas' excellent offseason allows for forgiveness with this signing, but boy, it's a pretty bad signing. Like, it's a pretty awful signing that you're basically cutting a guy this early into his tenure in a sport where you have a hard salary cap and for a team that's dealing with more cap issues than just about any other one around the game.
Yeah, and the cap issues is the root of this, right? Like, if they were further under the cap, it's no big deal to press box Richie and have him as a 13th forward there. But this gets them, you know, if he clears waivers and goes to the AHL, which there was some reporting yesterday that that's not the plan. Like, if like he's not Marlies bound necessarily. But if he is, that clears $1.125 million in wiggle room. You already have, you were about $100,000 below the cap before that. You got to get Liljegren back in here somehow. And Sandin right now is in as an emergency exception, and he'll eventually count as his cap hit too. So as you return to health, this is something we teed up a lot in early December before everything went the way it did with game cancellations and stuff. They were getting really close before that Mitch Marner injury to having to make a move like this anyway. So the way things played out bought them about a month, and Richie got, you know, one last crack at it, it seems like. But this, they had to do something because there just wasn't enough space to get Liljegren and Sandin on the roster under the cap.
I think I've come to my conclusion on who the next whipping boy is, JD.
Thank you. Yes, hit me.
I think it's back to being Kerfoot. And it's because if you look at the payroll, he's now, you got Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander. He's the next highest paid forward. He's been kind of sleepy, quiet. I think that he, at the beginning of the season, we wanted more from him. He's been very consistent, though. Consistently decent. But now you get the Nick Richie conversation is over, and I feel like he has a little bit more to prove. He's got a little bit more to be like, hey, I'm the next biggest forward contract at this moment. People were a little bit unsure about his fit, his role. He's been up and down the roster as well. He's filled in well during injuries. But now if we're back to full status, we're back to let's get into a playoff push. What are you bringing to the team? What is your role? What is your identity? I think that I still have question marks around what Kerfoot can do when he's at his best and what he is going to be consistently doing throughout the rest of the season. So I look towards him having a little bit more to prove at this point. If I'm looking just at the forward lineup, I think that I've gotten enough from Kampf, enough from Kasha, you know, Engvall maybe. Obviously, if you look at what Mikheyev done in the last couple games, I feel like I know about those players. I still have questions about Kerfoot.
So it's a good answer for a couple of reasons. One is that there's historical backing with Kerfoot not being a popular player. Number two is, if you want to point to any franchise in terms of how you arrive at whipping boys, money. Just like follow the money, you know? Follow the money, man. That's how you find who the whipping boy is. And so that's the way that I would be looking at it with this guy's case. My issue with it is he's clearly cemented himself into the proper role, which is to be a winger. And now he's playing with Tavares and Nylander, who, it's just hard to see those two guys sort of underwhelming or underperforming. It's like they almost have to go into the doldrums for Kerfoot to have the whipping boy status. And right now, Nylander's on pace for a 40-goal season. He's on track for a career year. And after Kerfoot's playoff performance, where everybody sucked and Kerfoot really stepped up and was good, it's harder for me to see how that happens without Nylander and Tavares suffering because of it, right? Both of you have.
Well, just a little bit on that is, like, I know that he's playing with better players, that also, to me, puts more pressure on you and more of a spotlight on you, because if they start to produce less or there starts to be chemistry issues, it's going to be his fault. Doesn't matter if it's Nylander, you know, being lazy, not playing well. It's going to be, well, because Kerfoot's on that line, because Kerfoot this. So I think that it adds a little bit extra pressure in a sense, because he's being given two players that are consistently good. So
Ailish, this is your time. This is your time, though. Like Saturday night, facing his old Colorado Avalanche
team. Oh, yeah, you better light it up, buddy.
If he can turn one over, if he can throw just a bad pass up the middle, now some Kadri interception, puts it in the back of the net. That's your case for Kerfoot. Like, this is a big moment for you. But, like, if you're going to buy the Kerfoot stock as him being the next whipping boy, this is a buy-now opportunity. I'm doing the Jim Cramer, like, buy, because this is your moment. Blake, who do you think it's going to be?
Yeah, so with Kerfoot, I mean, I get it. It certainly makes sense to me how you laid it out. I do think, you know, he's fifth on the team with 21 points, and he's played 3 minutes on the power play all season. Like, I do think he's, like, maybe just numbers. Both. Yeah, if someone's just, like, bringing up the points leaders or something like that to pick who they're mad about that morning, which I do think sometimes people
that
do.
That happens.
Kerfoot's maybe insulated from that. I'm going to follow the money here as well, and I'm going to pick someone who kind of is the other side of the best story of the Leaf season. I think with a couple back-to-backs ahead, if Peter Mrazek isn't really good in the games that they give him to get Campbell a rest, I think that could be someone that fans are honing in on. And again, it's not, you know, he's coming back from injury. Jack Campbell's been so good that you don't need him to carry a big load. But there is obviously concern around, you know, hey, getting Campbell to the playoffs, rested and healthy, and Mrazek does have that 3 year, nearly $4 million per contract. Mm-hmm. That when you're looking ahead to potentially re-signing Jack Campbell, that's in the way a little bit. So I think Mrazek's the guy that fans could circle around.
This is if we were playing Family Feud, like Spooner was yesterday, I would be doing the good answer. And I'd be looking up at the board, and I would expect it to bang out the number one answer, like, bing, and the Blake and I are high-fiving over here, and just, like, our team is celebrating that we got it. I agree with that. There's also the component, here's the other part of the Mrazek one, is that if he does suck and Campbell slows down, people are going to blame him as a non-trustworthy guy that is putting more pressure on a beloved Maple Leaf, right? Like, people love Jack Campbell. People love Jack Campbell. They root. If you ever talk to a Leafs fan in the flesh, I know you're not allowed today in this world. It's only virtual. But if you ever do come across a human being out there in the wilderness, almost everybody now calls him Soupy. Everybody. Everybody calls him Soupy. Do you know how beloved you have to be to get the Soupy nickname? It's like in the public. It's such a lame, overplayed, cliche nickname. He's not Jack. It's not Campbell. It's Soupy, and he's that in this city. People love that guy. If Mrazek can't play some of these big games, and he's costing them those, and it's forcing Jack Campbell, a guy who's already passing his career starts mark in January, having to put on extra strain, people are going to be pissed off. By the way, I also cheated with this answer, because the answer, if there's two whipping boys, is that we already have them. It's Muzzin and Hall, because they're kind of connected together. But either way, that cheating aside, I'm going to go with Team Blake here. I think it's Mrazek. It's a three-year contract. It's $1 million too much for what the Leafs should have paid for a backup goaltender. It's $1 million more than I think a lot of us thought it was going to be. It's a guy who could be a Band-Aid, who could end up getting hurt here. And I guess that could be an LTIR thing, but then it's like, oh, wait, is he coming back? Is it complicated? You can't trade him at that point. Mrazek, to me, is just, he's right there in the crosshairs for whipping boy status. I'm feeling that big time.
We've got two text answers. Keep them coming, 590, 590. We're actually going to have a couple segments today where we want your input and your feedback. So pull out your phones, dust off your Blackberries, Stewie, and let's get your feedback. But Mitch Marner is the answer from Jason in Toronto. He says, all playoffs. Eyes on Mitch Marner.
Yep. Totally, playoffs. But it's playoffs. It's all playoffs with Mitch. Like, he's going to rack up stats in the regular season. People, this is why I think he's a little bit exempt. To me, it feels like people have already made up their mind about Mitch Marner, and that it's polarizing. It's you're either in one camp or you're out. There's nobody who's riding the Mitch Marner line right now going, oh, you know, I think Mitch, there's some nuance here. It's either you think that this guy is the main reason that Toronto will never win a Stanley Cup, or you think that he is one of the most beleaguered, underappreciated, over-scrutinized players in hockey. It's one or the other. And so there's nothing in the regular season Mitch Marner can do. He's a regular season all-star. He sucks on the power play. He's a little miscast as somebody who is running a top power play unit because he can go 100 games without a goal. But the rest of Mitch Marner is pretty unassailable in the regular season. The guy has a 200-foot game. He brings it just about every single night. He's a driver. He's one of the best setup men in the league. He's got elite defensive skills. It's just, can he translate those into the playoffs when the minutes get harder and when size might matter more and when heart might matter more? He's higher up the pecking order than DeRozan was in the NBA, but there's a little bit of DeRozan to this now where it's like, who cares if you score 27 a night, DeMar? We want to see you in a playoff series not crumble against LeBron. And that's sort of how it is with Mitch at this point.
And he's coming back from injury right now, so I think he's got another week or, another couple games till the spotlight is fully back on him. I think he, even in the first game back, a little bit quiet, a little bit, he's taking baby steps into it. But I would agree. I think it's playoffs really is the only time that we'll get a full example of how Mitch Marner will be with the organization. And then we have Brad from Allison. Peter Engvall is the whipping boy. I get the salary, but I'd much rather see Kerfoot than Engvall.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, because Kerfoot's better, but that's why he makes $2 million more bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Engvall is, again, a quality answer because he is an extremely frustrating player. Mr. takes the puck and goes the wrong way. Plus, he's just sort of like, he's like long and gangly, and there's something to that when he's not playing as well where he stands out a little bit more.
Yeah, he's you can't big, miss him.
6'5", he's got that giraffe neck, and you're like, what's up, buddy? I see you. there's definitely that. He's also big and soft, which is really not the best combination in this city, which is such a weird thing that Toronto is such a... And I know the Toronto Maple Leafs don't just represent the city of Toronto, but it's not exactly the blue-collar of blue-collar area, and yet people love their blue-collar players, right? It's white-collar city that loves blue-collar hockey players, and that's not the way that I would view Pierre Engvall's game. The problem with this one is that Pierre's bar for success is so small, and he's also one of those guys that the analytics community has just carved out as one of their own, and it's just not worth it to get into it with you nerds. So it's just fine, take him. It's $1 million. If you say he's advanced stats Wayne Gretzky, then just do it. Just have it.
Yeah, is that still a thing? I thought we had left that in the past. I've never been a big Engvall guy.
I think it's only two people on all of Twitter that push the propaganda for Pierre Engvall, and it's just a fun thing to tease and play with. But yeah, I think and Engvall's had a better season, right? Like again, the bar was low, but he has been better this year. Mm-hmm. He's been a little bit more properly cast. His expectations are a little bit more feasible. Because of where he's got to be in this lineup. So it's one of those things where you go, what are you supposed to do? And it's basically just get the puck on net with really advantageous shifts. And he is, a decent defensive player, right? Like, I think that is a part of his game that is pretty quality at this point. It's more the other stuff that's frustrating is, he doesn't always seem the most engaged. And his possession, in terms of him holding the puck, he loves to skate it backwards. He really does. He loves to take the puck and go the other way. It's his favorite thing. But those are both good answers. We're really hitting on all the suspects, right? Like everybody. What I find incredible, though, is that no one is saying Nylander. Really, what a season for Nylander that I can't imagine being the person. Like, you're just telling on yourself if you picked Nylander at this point. Right? If you were sitting around the table, it'd be your uncle where he's like, what is that pretty Swede? You'd be like, oh yeah, that's you. You're telling
Uncle
yourself.
Uncle Rick.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only way that you'd be doing it.
No, he's leading the team in points. He's got a scoring point streak. He's just been very consistent. He's done in the playoffs. I think he just doesn't give two Fs about what other people say about him, and he just goes out there and just does his thing and goes back to his little world where he plays Call of Duty and doesn't let anything bother him. I don't think he even sweats or blinks an eye at what's going on. So I love it. I love it. Just keep doing it, Willie.
Ailish, do you think that in William Nylander's ideal world, when he's in his hotel room, it's playing Call of Duty?
Yeah, it's just like, don't talk to me. Let me do my thing.
Yeah.
Why?
I just think that there's other activities.
He talked about it that, like, when he was on the COVID break, did was play video games.
COVID break, though. Yeah. Like, forced by the government. I think that's the only way that you can keep ladies away from William Nylander is if you literally have a government decree that says you need to do it. Like, that's it.
I don't think he's going on the road and scooping up chicks. I think that he's focused on his production on the ice.
I disagree. I think he... thank you,
come
Vic.
On.
Yeah, every guy on the planet right now is like, what are you talking about?
I'm just trying to give him a little bit of, you know, a little bit of credit. He's been doing something right.
Yeah, I'm also trying to give him some credit. I think you and I have a very different ideas of credit here. Okay, so today we want to do my hopeless franchise rankings. This is something that I was thinking. I normally save this for later, but the NFL season is coming to a close, and I want to know if you guys want to do it here, if you want to break, because we went longer on Richie and Whipping Boys than I thought we were going to go. So how do you want to handle this? Do you want to take a break? Do you want to reset this? Do you want to kind of just have me explain it to everybody and then take the break?
Yeah, I say tee it up, and then we'll come out of the break. Obviously, we have A-List next, and then we can kind of go from there. We'll touch on it throughout the – it seems like one of those things we'll just sprinkle in throughout the show now. But yeah, tee it up, explain to everyone, because then people can get firing in their texts who you know, who their number one pick is, who immediately comes to mind with your format here.
So if you've been a long-term listener of mine, you know that every year I like to do the hopeless franchise rankings, and basically it goes like this: if you were just becoming a sports fan, if you were starting out, and today was your day across all four of the major North American sports, which is the team that you would least want to be a fan of, starting off? Who has the least amount of hope of actually rewarding you as a fan? Where you were basically just signing up for pain. Like somehow Blake Murphy, when he signed up for the Jacksonville Jaguars and made that horrific mistake one time. So this is the hopeless franchise rankings draft. And for a lot of people, they misinterpret this as, you know, the cursed franchise draft, right? So people would put, like, the Leafs or the Browns at the very top. But that's not how it operates with this, because we trend in some ghosts, but mostly logic here. So these are the qualifiers. And I used Michelin stars, as in this is on a three-star ranking system for each of the following categories: ownership, star power, the market, as in how attractive it is for players to play there, and then culture and history, and that is where the ghosts come into play. Each of those is scored out of three. You can give half stars, you can give zero stars, and so every year I will break it down. I will go through all those categories of all the franchises that I think are the worst. I usually start by ranking the teams and what I think they are, and then by going through the process, I usually almost always find that one team gets vaunted way up, one team ends up falling down. I realize that one team, it isn't so bad in comparison. But yeah, I make my top 10 most hopeless franchises moving forward. And so, yeah, we are going to draft this year, and then I'll reveal my list when everything is done and see how close we got to the list. We'll only pick three each, and then I think we'll have a lot of similarities across the board. But using that system, we will be giving Ailish Forfar the first quote-unquote pick. And that will be next. So, the most hopeless franchise, next on the Fan Morning Show with J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, Sportsnet 590 of the Fan. That's why. By the way, Vic, if you don't use that "the A-list can't be trusted" drop for the future B-list, you're fired. Just want to let you know that. Yeah, you're fired, Vic, if you don't use that for the B-list moving forward. It's got to be Shattered Glass, Stone Cold Steve Austin, wrestling, and then something to do with B, and then the A-list can't be trusted. That's the new format of this. This is the Fan Morning Show, Blake Murphy, Oxcord Friday. So if you want the music for today, especially if you're a Spotify listener and you're always like, what's going on? I don't ever get in on the music discussions. Well, you just have to follow Blake on Spotify. He's going to release all the songs today. He chose the music that we're all riding with. This is the block where we do the A-list. Before we do that, we are going to start the most hopeless franchise ranking. So again, just as a quick reset, there are four categories. You rank each of the four categories out of 3 stars. You can use half stars and you can give 0 stars. There is ownership, there is star power, and star power, by the way, I should say, extends to front offices and coaching staffs. So if you have those can be factored in here. There is the market in which the athlete plays, and then there is the actual team culture, which can include ghosts inside of that culture. There is also, if you end up with the same amount of stars, your very own tiebreaker. I tend to tiebreaker it with the sport I believe it's harder to win in or to get more relevant with. But after that, I think it's fun to just kind of make it up as you go and basically just explain how your gut feels about it if you have a tie, which can happen. So, Ailish Forfar, given the parameters of the Hopeless Franchise Rankings, you... Oh, Blake, sorry, you want to jump in there?
Oh, no, I was just hand signaling that she has the number one pick. I was just... Sorry, oh, okay. I realize now that's one of our hand signals. I was just trying to be dramatic.
Yeah.
Like when I do the A-list stuff with my
It's
just, hands.
It's a lot of pressure on you, Ailish. It's a lot of pressure on
you. I don't feel any
you.
Pressure.
Okay, yeah, you look stone cold. Like, you look like you got... Show me your hand. Put your hand up. Wow. No, not steady. One little shake to... Steady hand. All right.
Could cool we hand, shake Luke. Her by telling yeah. her Zoom's not muted to yeah. disrupt her? Oh,
Mrs. Mute. Oh. Mrs. Judgy
now,
Mute.
Now let's see the hand.
Now let's see.
Now let's see the hand.
Looks, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. That was,
less fingers. Less
that
fingers.
Only 20% of the hand.
Okay, all right. So who is the most hopeless franchise by your estimation, Ailish Forfar?
The most hopeless franchise would be the Arizona Coyotes. You look at their ownership, absolutely a disgrace. They're not paying their rent. They're getting rumors of being relocated every week. It's just an embarrassing time to be associated with that organization. They get a 0 for that. Their star power. What, Phil Kessel? I mean, they have Shane Doan in yeah. their front office. If you really want to get exciting about... You know, legends
no,
from the past.
Not, no, not, that doesn't count. Star
no,
power.
It doesn't.
Shane Doan's part of ownership, basically.
Right.
Then he is
so
star
0.
Power.
Not great. Their market. Let's be serious here. It's Arizona. The only way that I'm going to give them 0.5 for market is yeah. because they have the legend of Austin Matthews that is helping to create more energy in the Arizona market, and then their culture and history. Well, their culture, obviously, we know it's not great if you are not wanting to pay your rent and be relocated. But history-wise, they have Roenick, Tkachuk, Doan, and the 2000 playoff runs and cool jerseys. So I'm actually going to give them a 1 on that. So that's the highest thing that they have going for them is some of the players that used to play there and the little bit of like the cool Kachina jersey history. But everything else to do with the Arizona Coyotes is just... awful. They are doomed. If you wake up and you're going to become a fan, do not become a fan of the Arizona Coyotes.
So the Coyotes were number 1 on my board as well. I think
really?
They are the most hopeless franchise. I think you can't pay your arena bills. You don't have a home. You're bottom of the NHL except for the Sabres in attendance. You don't have, you know, like any kind of blue chip prospect. Like, apologies to that one guy, the 23-year-old they have, Keller. But like, you don't have that upward mobility. They just feel very, very far away. Mm-hmm. I actually thought, Ailish, you were nice to them. Getting 1 star total over 4 categories, I had them 0 right across the board.
Okay, so I have them further down my list.
I
and it's actually...
It
yeah, I have them further down. And I want to say that I really love that Ailish pointed out that when it comes to the market... that Matthews and Biz have actually made it mm-hmm. a little bit cooler.
They get a little bit of love for that.
Here's my case for them being, I have the Arizona Coyotes at 1.5 stars total. Okay. And here was my case. Number one is that their ownership is really bad and there's definitely rumors of leaving. And so I was torn on even giving them the half star. But the only reason I gave it to them is because it's a hard cap league. And so there is a little bit of a difference for me when we're looking at hopeless teams of how you can get back in the mix. Like, if you're in the NBA, this is a bigger issue because are you going to spend in the luxury tax, right? If you're in the NFL, are you going to have, you know, does star power matter more? Does NBA star power matter more? In hockey, I gave them a 0.5 star for star power because they have 3 first-round picks this year, 5 second-round picks with Shane Wright's coming up, and they got to be the favorite to tank for Connor
Bedard. But they don't have those people yet.
But they have those assets. And so
doesn't
to
count,
me,
in my opinion.
Well, but I look at same thing with prospects, right, that you have within your organization. It's like, what are your assets? And to me, it's like with baseball, I kind of cheat and use sometimes farm systems as star power because farm systems have become star power in baseball.
I did that as well.
I totally agree with that. But yeah. I would say there's a lot of times that you think that a team is going to hit on the draft or they have these assets. So I didn't view it that way. I totally understand that you did. I would just rather have a face to the name of who that draft is. Okay, then I think then I can give them a little bit more credit. So I didn't put that in my thoughts.
How many stars did you end up giving the Arizona Coyotes?
Blake did the math. Was it one a half?
You gave a 1 star, half star. I'm saying like we're very much in agreement. I have Arizona as one of the most moribund franchises, one of the most I have them as the number one most hopeless hockey franchise. And I gave them a 0.5 for market. Because I think that, again, it's the NHL, and you can sign guys if you have cap space. Plus, there's golf. There's weather. It's one of those places, Arizona. The only problem is, do you know who their biggest free agent signing is? It's like, even in hockey, it's Connor Murphy. I'm not going to make you guys wait. God. It's like, Connor Murphy. So despite it being the NHL, despite having golf, despite having weather, despite having, I think, the allure a little bit of the NHL places where you say, hey, you know, won't be in the media spotlight. I think this is kind of the tipping point of this where guys do not want to play in Arizona because it's like, yeah, I don't want attention necessarily, but I want no attention to live in California potentially. I don't want to live in Arizona and do this and have it.
I gave them 1 star in total.
Yeah. I gave them 1.5, and I guess I could come around to dropping that down to 1 considering like maybe ownership should be bigger if, you know, you are telling people already that you're not moving the team to Houston. So I'm gonna drop that down to 1 star, and because I think that you made a pretty compelling case. I'm number 2. My most hopeless franchise is the Washington football team. I gave them 1 star as well. I cheated, though, to get this ranking. So, again, this is my system, so I get to manipulate it on you guys on the fly.
I cheat against it.
I gave my first negative rating ever because I realized that it's just not good enough giving Dan Snyder a 0. Like, Dan Snyder is a -1, even among bad owners. Like, I feel like ownership is my first category for a reason because you have to have ownership. If you know anything about sports, ownership matters. And Dan Snyder is worse than James Dolan. That is something. Like, you can't even compare him. Every owner that's bad in sports, this guy takes the cake. He's been embroiled in controversy. He's a cheap ass. He is never accountable. He will never go anywhere. He fights over the stupidest things. He is horrific. The worst owner in professional sports to me, the new building around this is that he gets a -1. So -1 for Dan Snyder.
-1 star. Got it.
Yeah. I gave them a 1 in the star power rankings because they have Chase, they have Sweat, they have Terry McLaurin. Chase ended up getting the injury. That defense was like really bad this season, so it's hard for me to give them more than that. But yeah, Terry McLaurin doesn't appear to be a top 10 receiver. They don't have a quarterback. I think even giving them 1 is a bit generous given the state of where that defense is. Culture, again, it's a 0. Since the year 2000, do you guys know how many playoff wins the Washington football team has? Yes.
1.
Yes, 1. That's correct. Tampa Bay in 2005. They're the scandal team. They're the ones where every year you kind of expect Dan Snyder to get ousted from that organization. And so it's like, when is it going to be? And then I gave the market 1 star because I think Washington is a fine place. You're in a solid geographical spot. But, again, you play in a rusted-out hull. And I think that the better team to be a part of is just down the road in Baltimore. You're looking around saying, I'd rather be in New York. I'd rather be in a different city like Washington. It's a politics town, not a football town. And so I don't think that it's that great. So I gave them one star total.
What if they rename as the Red Hogs? Is that more negative points?
1.5. Oh. No, okay. 1.5. If they they're not more as hopeless because at least you get to
there's
be
a
like,
chance.
You get to yell out as you're watching, look at my hogs. Like that's where I'm
saying.
Yeah.
Whatever that that hog sound is.
Yeah. So Blake Murphy, it swings over to you.
I wonder who he's gonna pick.
I actually do because I have a tie in terms of the next two in terms of what they're graded out as with their stars.
Yeah, well, I'm on the turn here, so I'll get our first pick in the next round. So, you know, splitting the hairs here is more just symbolic than anything. But the Jacksonville Jaguars are my pick. I have lived it. It feels very hopeless. They don't have a lot of, like, you have to go far back to either a fluky Blake Bortles season or the Mark Brunell era when I first became a fan to find any sort of history. The only real cultural cachet they have, if you're a football hardcore, probably actually annoys you because it's the AEW tie-in where All Elite Wrestling films all their wrestling out of the Jaguars' place, and like there's always little wink-wink tie-ins and stuff. Ownership, not great. Deep, deep pockets, but they have not used those effectively. They have not had a good long-term plan for anything. The Urban Meyer thing is just a disaster, and the early reporting about their next coaching search is not strong either. Nothing on the market side. They have the third lowest attendance in the NFL. It's not really like a football city, I don't think. And maybe
but all their
it would
fans
be.
Are going to wear clown costumes.
Yeah. Look, there is a good community of Jaguars hardcores online. I don't know how much that extends to, hey, if things went well, would people jump on? Like, you had to put a pool in your stadium to get people to keep coming and stuff. The only saving grace for the Jaguars is that they do have Trevor Lawrence, who has had a very, very bad rookie season by the standards of a pro-ready number one pick. But you've got some time there, and if Lawrence clicks, that's your upward mobility. You also have the number one pick coming up, which, you know, back-to-back years, I believe they're only the sixth franchise ever to have back-to-back number one picks, which tells you just how hopeless they are. So there is some upward mobility there if Lawrence clicks. That's their only saving grace. And, yeah, everything else here is just blah.
So what this do is... they get for stars?
They got a one.
Stars. They one got a star. One. Okay. I gave the Jacksonville Jaguars 3 stars. They are further down the list for me. Here's how I rank them. Owner, 0. Again, in his 10-year span as owner, he's had 4 head coaches, and his record is 41-119. That's a tough look for your ownership right there, especially considering this is the guy that hired Urban Meyer and at the podium was like, we finally figured it out. And then you know what happened from there. He also wants the team to be in London, and that has to account for things. So Shad Khan is a hard 0 for me. I gave them a 2, though, when it came to star power, because I'm not writing off Trevor Lawrence. This is a year removed from this guy being a generational quarterback prospect. And so give me a year without Urban Meyer and all this drama and actually like one receiver to throw the ball to before I decide to knock that down. I'm sorry. A franchise quarterback, first overall pick, gets the year buffer at least to still be a 2. Honest to God, I would probably pick star power here at like a 2.53 because they have the first overall pick. Had Lawrence done anything? Had Lawrence been halfway competent this year, the Jaguars aren't even eligible for this list because their star power is so undeniable, because this is one of the most important things in all of sports is nailing that position, right? So I have them further down because of Lawrence.
So my counter to that, I give them 1 star here, and I'm with you. If Trevor Lawrence hits, this all looks different. But I will say, if, like, this has been a really bad rookie season, and if for whatever reason Trevor Lawrence, say he ends up even an average quarterback, this gets really, but, like, the outlook is really bad.
100% it does. But this is, again, as of right now, if you were going to be buying stock in a team, and I cannot put the Jags lower than some of the other teams that I have, because at least you have that star power, that hope of Trevor Lawrence being something. And so I had the market as a one because it's still Florida. And guess what? Like, a lot of guys like being in Florida. And taxes. That matters. Yes, exactly. Florida is a tax haven place. There's a ton of football players that are from there. They have family that's close. They have roots that are there. Florida is a big deal for NFL players. And so the market still gets a one. And then, of course, the culture gets a zero. It's in complete shambles. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, they've had multiple acrimonious departures with stars. We watched that amazing defense crumble overnight, and then it was inherited by Urban Meyer and co. So that's a zero. But overall, I give the Jacksonville Jaguars 3 stars, 2 for star power, 1 for market. They are not in my bottom 5 most hopeless franchise rankings, Blake. So I would like to say that as a congratulatory way for you, is like, you're out of the doldrums. I actually have 2 football teams ahead of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's break from this, and we will continue our most hopeless franchise rankings. But first, the A-list.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Yo, how about our bing bong last night?
RJ,
he's just the star of the A-list. Actually, he's not in it, but the bing bonging was in full form last night.
We'll get into that. The one photo of him, the angle his body is at on the shot,
it was insane.
On the buzzer beater.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Outrageous. We'll talk about that in the wake and rake because somebody messed that up. Not going to name who that is. But in the A-list today, our buddy Logan Paul. He's always out there in the headlines, but this time maybe not for the reason you're thinking. So he, earlier this month, well, that was like 6 days ago, he bought $3.5 million first edition base set of Pokemon cards, okay, on eBay, which I didn't think you could spend that much money on eBay, but he bought this case of cards for $3.5 million. Turns out that they might actually not be authentic.
Amazing.
After all this, the person that was selling them, number one Pokemon Master, had little feedback on eBay. Their account is no longer active. The seller had multiple different stories about where he got these cards from. Anyway, so they were authenticated by a company that does baseball cards, which has no experience doing Pokemon cards. So the evidence is stacking up that this is probably a scam, but didn't seem to have done the research enough. He is now, Logan Paul announced that he's flying to Chicago to get the case of Pokemon cards authenticated to see if they're real. That will be this weekend, so stay tuned. It'll be, I'm sure, all over your timelines if they are fake and you spend $3.5 million on fake Pokemon cards.